What exactly is a regional transmission organization? What will happen to Colorado's power production if we join one? And is a free market in electricity even possible? We discuss all this and more on this week's edition of the Power Gab podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing the podcast. And to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to podcast for all things Colorado energy and environment. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook.
In studio, 2 weeks in a row.
That's right. It's a new record.
It's going to start being a trend.
Yeah. This episode, we wanted to do a little bit of a piggyback off of the previous episode we had with Meredith Engwin. Meredith is fantastic, and she gave us all a great primer on what these things RTOs, regional transmission organizations, are all about. But we wanted to take a more Colorado-centric approach to what that actually would look like in this state, because as we pointed out previously, state law has dictated that by 2030, we have to consider joining an RTO. So to maybe provide a little more context for our listeners out there who aren't electricity nerds like you or I, we're going to talk about what that might look like. So,
yeah, it's kind of interesting. We hear RTO, Regional Transmission Organization, and it is by 2030. So you're thinking, I got 6 years to learn what this thing is. But we are moving that direction, and what I'm sure you've heard from proponents, if you've heard anything at all from them, is that it is, they're going to put us into a market, and you'll get to choose your electricity, where you're getting your power, or what type of power. So in other words, I'm going to be able to choose wind or solar, or I don't know that we'll actually have the choice of being able to choose natural gas or coal, but in theory, the idea is it's a market, and I put market in air quotes, because the question really is it a market, Jake? Yeah,
that is a fantastic jumping off point, because as you said, obviously we're free marketeers here, we're good yep. free marketeers in good standing. And something that looks like a market should automatically be appealing. And, you know, you see sort of this bifurcation among free market advocates about whether RTOs really are a market. They are a market. Whether they're free or not is another story. When RTOs started becoming really popular, it was late 90s, early 2000s. Most of the country now operates under an RTO, but it was proposed under this theory of we're going to deregulate electricity, right? Deregulation was how it was painted. And they're anything but deregulated. And that's where I think some of our hangups with RTOs come from. You can call it a free market if you want, but a free market it ain't, because it's layer upon layer of red tape, bureaucracy, a nonprofit that oversees things. It's sort of a cluster of things that people that normally think of free markets, they wouldn't associate that with how RTOs operate.
So we are in a system in Colorado that is called a vertically integrated monopoly system there are a number of things, but we say vertically integrated. And what does that mean, right? I mean, what does vertically integrated mean? It means you have one utility that services you as a customer, and they own the generation. Well, usually they own the generation. Doesn't always have to be that way, but usually they own the generation. They own the distribution, the distribution of it, transmission of it, and they own it all the way to the point of getting to your house, and then that you get your bill, and you paid Xcel or your co-op, or you might be in a municipal. I think Colorado Springs is a municipal. Yep. Boulder never got there, but there might be. Fort Collins.
Yep.
Fort Collins is a municipal. So there are a handful of municipal utilities as well. And you have one provider. They own most of the system, or they control most of the system. And they're also the same people who generally, from whom you get your bill. Now, some buy from Xcel or other independent producers, but for the most part, they own that entire system. And the trade-off for that is we're supposed to get it at a what's called a reasonable and just rate.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're supposed to keep your costs low because they don't have to compete with anybody. So you're supposed to get reliable, affordable power at the least cost. And they have, and then the provider has one, you only have one, but and they have one market, and it's supposed to supposed to work out. You know, everybody's supposed to be happy. You know, this, we're all turning on our power and light, the light goes on, or flip the switch, the light goes on and you pay your whatever. But there is, to your point, in the 90s, and it started with Enron in Texas. And I always feel good about Enron being behind something. But it was Enron in Texas that really was the start of these markets. And the question is, when we go into a market and a regional transmission organization, is it going to be better for Colorado ratepayers, or is it going to be, or will there be issues? Will it be this market?
So yeah, that's a great primer to kind of give people a sense of where we are currently. So for example, if you have XL and say that XL says, oh, it looks like electricity demand is gonna go up, so we need to build a power plant. And they say, well, we wanna build this natural gas power plant. And if the PUC says, okay, they get to build it. They get to recoup the cost from you in terms of your bill, and they also get a nice little profit. If we go to an RTO system, the RTO is this nonprofit entity that sort of, you can think of maybe like an air traffic controller of the grid. It's their job to pay attention to the projected demand on the grid and then send power where it needs to go. And it's over a multi-state footprint where all of these incumbent utilities, merchant generators, which are just private people that build power plants and sell their power, can go and bid in into this sort of, it sounds sort of complicated, but basically how it works is it's an auction where RTO says, we're projecting X amount of demand, and all of these power producers say, well, we can give you this much power, this much power, this much power at this price. And it goes all the way up until demand is met. And whatever the most expensive thing to meet that very last bit of demand, that's the market clearing price. And every single one of those generators gets that amount of money. So typically how this works is it's natural gas. This Meredith and the previous episode mentioned sort of the fatal trifecta. One of those prongs was over-reliance on renewables and natural gas, and RTOs are famous for this. And the reason for that is because renewables, the bids that get entered into these RTO auctions are set by the marginal cost of operating, so the operating cost of a power plant. And so solar and wind have, the one thing that they do have going for them is they have very low marginal cost. Wind is free, sun is free, there's no fuel cost. So they can bid in very cheaply in these, 5-minute increment auctions. And then natural gas has to, make up whatever the balance is that renewables can't supply. And your baseload power plants, your coal, your nuclear, obviously there's no nuclear in Colorado, but coal, it's much more economic, even though it's very cheap if it's allowed to run baseload, it's much more economic for it to always be running, and it gets squeezed out over time. And this is where we see a lot of the reliability issues in RTOs, where it becomes not as much of a good deal. You may be getting this low marginal cost power in the good times when things are going well, but over time, you're gradually drowning out your most reliable power plants that you need when, for example, wind and solar aren't not producing.
And that's a great way to put it. And the other point of that is, too, is that wind and solar are also subsidized.
Right.
So not only can they bid into the auction, not just at zero, they can pay distributors to take their power. If you have a baseload power plant that has coal, 90-day supply of coal, even a natural gas power plant that requires on time, there are fuel costs and those are real costs that they have to pay. What happens is, so you could have somebody essentially paying distributors to take their power. Meanwhile, coal or natural gas, or in the case of some of the other RTOs, and there are 7 in the United States, by the way. Nuclear will be in some of those. They have real costs. And to recoup those costs, they have to run at a certain amount. I mean, you can't just have a coal plant sit there and idle when they have costs and then expect it for the 20% of the time that you want it to go, okay, I'll turn on for 20%.
Right.
It isn't going to happen. And that's why we say these subsidized wind and solar are squeezing out baseload power like coal, nuclear, I'd say natural gas as well. What happens is natural gas just gets really more expensive because it's an on-time resource, but you squeeze those out. And then when demand is super high, like what happened in Texas or what happened in North Carolina, and this wasn't an RTO problem. This was a problem of an equipment failures. But what happens is you have rolling blackouts because you don't have the power you need to meet the demand because your base load is gone.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And the subsidies point, I'm kicking myself for not mentioning that, because that's, I think, the biggest contributor to why RTOs have become so pernicious. And it sort of is the reason number one why free market is not an apt description for it, because as you pointed out, the federal government has set a $30 per megawatt production tax credit for renewables. So when there's a bunch of wind blowing and a bunch of sun shining, the price can go down to zero or at times negative, and that completely distorts the price signals of the market, which the whole, you know, theory behind these markets was that price signals were going to dictate the cheapest available power, and unadulterated price signals will also incentivize generators to build new plants. And if you're totally undermining price signals, look, I'm a good Hayekian, I love price signals as much as the next guy, but you're completely distorting the price signals, you're undermining the very nature of these markets. And since there's no, you know, sign that these production tax credits are going anywhere, it's tough to say that an RTO is going to be a good bet for Colorado. We're going to see probably a lot of the same experience that other RTOs have seen.
Yeah, they're not even price signals because they are federally subsidized,
right,
prices, essentially. And here's the other thing. The reason why it's also not a price signal is because, you know, in out of your right pocket, you're paying for your utility bill. Your left pocket, you're paying for your utility bill. So just because it's at the federal level doesn't mean we're not paying for it.
That's right.
We are still paying for it. The worst part is, too, this is about to get worse with the Inflation Reduction Act,
right,
which it should be the, you know, Inflation Production Act, because there are somewhere, and Travis Fisher of Cato, we're both huge fans of Travis. If you ever want to go to, his name is Travis Fisher, Musings from the Fish Tank, that's Travis Fisher on Substack, and he talks about if the subsidies in the Inflation Reduction Act don't get repealed, the reliability of the grid, and that means Colorado, right? I mean, because we're going to be in one of these RTOs by 2030. The legislature has said we're going there, and the governor signed the bill. There is another 2 to 3 billion, or is it, no, wait, I think it might be $1 trillion,
yeah,
in subsidies, $2 to $3 trillion in subsidies that will absolutely devastate baseload power here in Colorado.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think the piece is called, has something to do with it's turning RTOs into subsidy clearinghouses.
Yeah,
the Inflation
Reduction
Act. We'll put it in the show notes so people can read it, and they definitely should check it out. But that's exactly right. The Inflation Reduction Act production tax credits are open-ended, so that there's no cap on how many people can use them. And as wind and solar are both being encouraged at the federal level and by state policy, obviously Colorado, we've talked about this in our Colorado focus shows, where we have all sorts of policies that we're going to be 100% renewable, 100% wind and solar. The more they get built, they're just being incentivized to run, even when the price signals would say it's not economic to run, but they're artificially being made whole by these tax dollars. It's going to drive out the reliable natural gas, any future hypothetical nuclear, hypothetical geothermal that also need consistent revenue, need to consistently run.
Right.
Those won't even have a chance because they'll be squeezed out by just-in-time peaker natural gas plants, and then the renewables that are subsidized to death.
So. And you talk about the just-in-time peaker natural gas plants. So, for instance, if it's an older natural gas plant that is, yeah, or it was one that was sort of like St. Vrain,
right,
which was nuclear converted to natural gas, things like that are not going to survive. Plants like that just are not going to survive. And I was talking with somebody who asked about Craig Power and what's going to happen to Craig Power. Could it be one that goes nuclear? Maybe. Could it be one that goes natural gas? Maybe. But with this, the answer is no. It's not. It is going to be literally a stranded asset that is there that we are still probably paying for, but it won't be utilized because it won't be economical when you have all of these subsidies. that wind and solar are chasing and can chase. It will push out all of that reliability. And the worst part about this, we won't know who to blame.
Right.
So when your power doesn't, when you flip the switch and the light doesn't go on, or when it's bitter cold and we don't have heat, or we don't have, you don't have power in your home, you won't know who to blame. No one will be responsible. Literally no one will be responsible, because a generator will just say, well, all I do is generate. And the RTO will say, well, all I do is distribute. I'm the air traffic controller. I can't control anything. If there are no planes in the sky, I have nothing to control. If there's no power to distribute, no one's distributing it. And no one will be responsible, and you won't be able to get answers because they're nonprofits.
Right. No, that's a great point. You and I are both, we take a backseat to very few people and how critical we've been of Xcel and the Public Utilities Commission. But when push comes to shove, if Xcel screws up, they don't have the power that they need at a given moment, at least you can haul them in to the, State Assembly just did this over utility rates a year ago. You can haul them in, you can bring Robert Kenney, who is the CEO of Xcel, and ask why wasn't power available. There's some accountability. In theory, the state could even revoke Xcel's charter if it really screwed up. But as to your point, a nonprofit RTO, it's sort of this faceless web of lawyers and merchant generators behind the scenes that you're not really a part of. And then this nonprofit that, like you said, is not responsible for producing the electricity. They just coordinate. It's like, where does the buck stop? And it doesn't really stop with anybody.
And the other, the public isn't allowed in. There's no media allowed in those meetings. You can't do an open records request on them because they're not subject to them. So, and this happened in North Carolina, where there was a 14-hour blackout on Christmas Eve 2022. And I'll tell you what, within a few weeks, the North Carolina Utilities Commission had brought Duke Energy in there, and they all lined up, and they had to say exactly what happened. And they went through minute by minute of what happened. And it was a combination of purchase power that didn't materialize, some equipment failures, and then human error of the predicted load was too low. So they hadn't, they made a bad prediction. And then they went through, so this is exactly what happened, and here's how we're going to fix it. I have no love for monopoly utilities, as you just said, and PUC, I've got no love for them either. But but if I petition the PUC and I have enough money, we can actually intervene, right? And we can, or we could be a part of comments. We can go to meetings there. I have been critical of that process, and I think that process needs reform. But I don't think it should be an RTO.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I think one thing we didn't touch on as well, another issue with RTOs, is transmission allocation.
Oh, gosh.
Because the more you talk about these renewables are being subsidized, more and more are being built. We've talked about in the past how that means more transmission lines, because wind and solar are located oftentimes far away from where they're actually the power is actually needed. And it's sort of a similar trend we're talking about here, where there's sort of a diffusion of responsibility. So Xcel, for example, in Colorado right now, if it wants to build a transmission line, it does it like it does any other thing, like a power plant. It says, PUC, we'd like to build this transmission line in the Eastern Plains. PUC says either yay or nay, and it gets built. With an RTO, the federal government gets involved. There's all sorts of negotiations between different stakeholders in the RTO footprint, and the costs get allocated in different ways. It's not, maybe I'm benefiting from this transmission line that's being built out of state, but it's in the RTO footprint, and those costs are still going to my bill. So it's another issue where there's sort of this diffusion in trying to do this market construct where it's actually leading to increased costs and reduced accountability for the consumer.
And I hear this a lot. It's a market, so it's much more transparent. And I said, tell me how, because it has been our experience that it is not. You have less transparency, because the public isn't allowed into many of these stakeholder meetings. We can't just go in and sit in on them. And transmission lines, that's a huge one. Because if we're drawing power, for instance, and we know why Colorado wants to be in an RTO, because of that 100% renewable goal, the only way they can achieve it is by buying that power from other states. But are we expecting Wyoming to pay the transmission costs for Colorado power? I don't think so. I don't think Wyoming's going to want that. We might like it, but Wyoming won't.
Yeah. We're coming up on time here, so I want to wrap up, but in getting close to our wrap-up time, do you have some big takeaways that you want to leave with the listeners for what RTOs might look like in Colorado?
I'll probably copy from yours when we did the sort of 50,000-foot view with Meredith, and by the way, get her book, Shorting the Grid. It's absolutely phenomenal, but RTOs are not markets. Monopoly utility, that construct is not perfect and is ripe for reform, which I think is a better way to go. And then third would be reliability will decrease and your costs actually are going to increase.
What about the tagline?
Oh, yeah. Well, you're right. Oh, my gosh. And by the way, get your generator and get it before 2030 when everybody else wants one.
That's all we've got for you guys this week. Thank you for tuning in to PowerGab. If you like what we do here, head on over to powergab.org to see the rest of the video podcast that we've done. Or if you prefer the audio version, we're available anywhere that you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify or iTunes. And if you want to participate in the show, if you want to suggest topics, guests, anything like that, send those emails and those comments to info@powergab.org. We'd love to hear from you guys. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of PowerGab, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.